part of the conversation is with the American consulate here in Lagos about education. So that will be coming your way at 8:30. So you're welcome to join our conversation on Facebook, Nigeria Info 99.3. We're streaming live. We're also on YouTube, Nigeria Info 99.3 as well. On YouTube, feel free to drop your comments there. If you were in Ukraine before the war started, or during the war, and you found your way back home or back anywhere, feel free to let us know your real life experience. According to BBC Africa Eye, it's estimated thousands of Africans were among more than 5 million refugees fleeing the Russian invasion of Ukraine. BBC Africa Eye says as they tried to escape the carnage, many Africans were treated like second-class citizens. Reports of discrimination at Ukraine's western borders were widespread, with the UN High Commissioner for Refugees acknowledging racist treatment. We have Peter Okoche, a senior broadcast journalist with the BBC, joining us right now. Peter, a very lovely morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Sheriff, and a very good morning to your listeners.
Morning to you too. Let's begin with what you found out about the discrimination at the Ukraine western borders. What can you tell us about what you saw?
So, Sheriff, just a few days after the Russia invaded Ukraine, I went to the Polish border with Ukraine, which was where a vast majority of people from who are fleeing the war in Ukraine were trying to flee too. So they were trying to cross the border into Poland. And in the first few days of that invasion, if you went on social media, we started hearing tales and stories about how Africans were being, not only Africans, you know, I mean, migrants. So Middle Easterners, Southeast Asians were being treated or mistreated as they crossed the border from Ukraine into Poland. Right. And no, mainstream media wasn't really talking about this part of the story. But we felt it was very important that that we tell the story in its entirety. So 3 days after the invasion, I made it across to this small Polish town called Siemyszyn, which is about 5 minutes away from the border. So I went there, and when I got there, you know, already thousands of Africans had crossed into Poland, and we sat down and we had chats with them about the kind of treatment that had been meted out on them, mainly by the Ukrainian border guards. And they gave us stories of discrimination, racism, not being allowed to cross the border, standing in the cold, some of them for 18 hours. Some of them had to walk 12 hours just to get to the Polish border because the Polish border guards would not allow them on buses or on trains that could transport them closer to the border.
So Peter, you said something that really caught my attention, and that is the reportage of this development. Why do you think this was so? Could it be that the war was more intriguing or more important than the migrants whose lives are unnecessarily being put at risk?
Well, the truth about it is, Sheriff, you know, it's a bit of both. You know, I mean, in the Western press, issues that have to do with minorities, so Africans, so Southeast Asians, Middle Easterners, you know, take second place to issues that have to deal with those particular societies. But then secondly, you know, for many of them, this was just a small part of a bigger story, you know, a massive story. Russia invading another so-called first world country, a country that had very, very close ties to Russia. So you're right, it was a bit of both, the fact that there was a really big story happening, but then the stories of minorities are always gobbled up by the stories of the majorities. But we felt, you know, as the BBC and as a reporter myself, we felt that though the Russians were bullying the Ukrainians were being bullied, if in turn the Ukrainians were bullying a small group of people, then that story needed to be told. Because I personally, I believe that everybody's suffering counts.
Indeed, absolutely everybody's suffering counts. But I want to take us back to the border again. With what you saw, with the people that you spoke with, what were their mindset like? Did they feel betrayed by the country that they've been in for so long? Or did they just feel that it's one of those things?
You know what, Sheriff? I mean, it was a very depressing situation. You know, some of these people who were crossing over, a vast majority of them were students who had gone there to study. So some of them, for instance, were studying medicine and had been there for 5-6 years. Some of them just had 3 more months to go before they wrote their final exams to graduate. Some of the families that we met there, some of them had been in Ukraine for as much as 17 years. So they called Ukraine home already. You know, I spoke to a Ugandan family who had been there for 14 years. Both their children were born in Ukraine. One is called Dara. The other one is called Dimitri. Both Ukrainian and Russian names. So, and they didn't speak any other language but Ukrainian and Russian, had never been to Uganda before. So Uganda was home. So a lot of them, you know, they felt the loss of a homeland, but they were not happy about what they thought was their homeland and the way they were treated by some of their fellow citizens of that country. But it was very depressing. You know, I spoke to a Ukrainian woman who had crossed over the border who said she was standing forlorn alone. And I went to ask her, I said, are you okay? And she kind of looked at me with this blank stare, like, you know, how can I be okay? You know, I just yesterday I had a house, I had a family, I had a job, I had a car. But now here I am, a refugee in a country I've never been to before. How can I be okay? So, you know, it was a very depressing situation. And what made it worse for the Africans was initially the Ukrainian government denied it. I managed to speak to the Russian ambassador to the Ukrainian ambassador, I beg your pardon, to South Africa,
right.
Ambassador Abrivitova.
Right.
And she completely denied it out of hand and said this was a lie, this was not happening. Incidentally, a few days later, her government back in Kyiv issued a statement to acknowledge the fact that, yes, that Africans and other migrants were being mistreated at the border and that they were going to do something about it. And as you said in your introduction, even the UNHCR, you know, acknowledged the fact that Africans were being racially mistreated.
Now, that brings me to Africans, because I know that, you know, there are migrants, you know, from everywhere. But I'm particularly concerned about Africans now. The fight against racism all across the world can never stop. We've seen the footballers, especially in the UK, taking the knee every time they want to start, you know, their games. And it's applicable in the America as well. When they want to start their basketball, some teams still do. From the standpoint of a broadcast journalist who has seen it all, do you think the advocacy, the campaign against racism, even at this point when you know that the lives of these people is dependent on in good time they crossed over to, you know, a safe area, you still try to deny them that opportunity. Do you think the advocacy is having any impact whatsoever?
I think it is. I think it is. I mean, I've lived in Europe for many years, and before I moved to the UK, you know, I lived in mainland Europe as well, and you know, I've seen racism. And at a point, we thought, well, you know, things were getting better, but I've got young kids who still experience it once in a while. In some countries, it's very much institutionalized, and then you know, it's ignorance. You know, it stems from ignorance, and it's very, you can't cure a society or certain members of a society of ignorance. You know, the only way to do it is to enlighten them. So as long as these enlightenment campaigns go on, you mentioned footballers in the Premier League taking a knee. As long as these enlightenment campaigns go on, it will get better. You know, it's getting better, but it's still there. You know, you see it in people's eyes. You see in people's attitudes towards you, the condescending way they look at you. You see it when you walk into a supermarket and the security man or woman starts following you around all the different aisles to make sure that you're not pocketing anything. It's a shame, but you know, I guess it's part of living in a Western country or living in a foreign country.
Right.
And you know, you have to weigh that against whether you want to go back home at that particular point in time.
Back to your documentary, Peter. Before you left, what was the situation like?
Well, it was very difficult to tell because, you know, I spoke to the Zimbabwean ambassador to Germany, who also covers Poland, Slovakia, and Hungary. And I was asking, I said, so do you know how many Zimbabweans there are in Ukraine? And she said between 200 and 500. Now, that's a vast number, from 200 to 500. Hmm. But her reason was that, you know, not all Africans who travel to these foreign countries go and register with the embassies. Hmm. So it's very difficult to know whether or not, to know how many of your citizens are in a particular country. So there's no real accurate census of that. So it's difficult for us to say if there are any Africans who are still left in Ukraine. Hmm. Everybody that we spoke to in this documentary, Not Our War, actually managed to go out. And Sheriff, I just want to dispel one narrative that was going around social media at the beginning of this invasion, that African governments were not doing enough to get their citizens out of Ukraine. You know, that was the narrative that we heard before we got to
Ukraine,
to the Ukraine border. Mm. Now, you know, I've been a journalist for many years. I'm not an apologist for any government at all. I hold governments to account, but that narrative was false. Mm. There were a lot of African governments within the first 2-3 days at this particular border post that I was at,
right,
trying to ferry their citizens out. You know, the Nigerian ambassador, he's a retired general. I think his name is a retired General Okwa. He was driving an 18-hour round trip just to get Nigerians who had crossed to the border out. Mm. The Zimbabwean ambassador, she was a lone woman standing at the border trying to get her people out. I saw the Ugandans, I saw the Kenyans, I saw the Tunisians, the Egyptians had been there, the Ghanaians had been there. Mm. So this narrative, I know that African governments get it wrong many times, but at this particular point in time, this narrative that they were not doing enough, they were doing a lot in a very difficult situation.
Mm.
I just wanted to put this out there.
Fantastic, because it's a part of the areas I was hoping that we'll cover, but I'm glad that you've rightly dealt with that. But the part of that particular question I want to also talk about is, from what you saw, could you say authoritatively that most of the Nigerians at the border were safely evacuated?
So this border point is about 5 or 7 minutes from the town where I was. So the border point is called Madika, and the town was called Shemeshil. Okay. So we'll drive to Madika to go and see what was happening there, then drive back to the train station at Shemeshil, where people were trying to get on board trains to leave. Mm. Now, a lot of the Africans were not brought into Shemeshil.
Okay.
That's a point we have to make.
Okay.
They were picked up at the border by the Polish border guards and driven 13 hours away towards the German border.
Hmm.
Now, what happened to them at that German border, we don't really know. We kind of suspect that they were taken there because Poland wanted them to just cross the border into Germany, where they'd find communities that are more friendly to migrants, so to speak.
Okay.
But some of the ones that did come into the town of Shemeshil, some of them didn't want to leave simply because they still had friends across the border who had not crossed over yet, and they were trying to help them across. And then we saw Nigerians that are coming from Warsaw, that's the capital, who were trying also. I mean, I met this young man from Lagos State who said he had lived in Poland for years, and he had hired a bus, you know, with his own money to come down to Shemeshil.
Okay.
And his plan was to try and move 300 Nigerians from Shemeshil to Warsaw, where they would be safer. This town of Shemeshil, where I was, it's a small town of 60,000 people and doesn't have a history of diversification. They were a bit shocked to see so many migrants in that small town.
Mm, indeed. So, Peter, how can people watch this documentary if they're interested in watching again?
So if you go to the BBC Africa Eye YouTube page and then type in Not Our War. That's the title of the documentary. It's a 25-minute documentary. It's a very touching, harrowing documentary. But, you know, we've just allowed people tell their stories. And it's their stories and my experiences in this town that we talk about. It is well worth a watch. And on that YouTube channel as well, there are other investigations that have been carried out by the BBC, including one that also has to do with cultism in Nigeria. All of them quite interesting watches, yeah.
Right, right. Very quickly, Peter, I'm going to open up the phone lines to get some calls in, perhaps a question or two from our listener out there, and then we wrap up. 0700-993-993-993. That is 0700-993-993-993. And 01465-7190. For female callers only. That's 01465-7190 for female callers. If you're watching on Facebook and on YouTube, you can please drop your comments and I would come to take them. We have about, I think, three minutes before we wrap this conversation up very quickly. So let's begin the calls now, please. You have a very limited time to share your thought with us. Good morning to you.
Hello, Sherry. Good morning.
Morning to you.
Oh, yeah. Please, I want to ask you again. My name is Benjamin, calling you from Ojo.
Welcome, Benjamin.
What are the government... What are the government talking about the war? To settle the war issue in between Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah. What's the question exactly? It's not clear.
Sir?
What's your question exactly?
No, what are they talking about? The end, they come here to bring an end to the war, the issue, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
I'm sorry, your government cannot bring an end to the war. Let me speak to Ade. Ade, hi. We lost Ade's call. I'm going to take another one quickly now. Good morning to you.
Hello, Sheriff.
Morning to you.
Yeah, this is Joy.
Welcome, Joy.
This is my first time to actually say a very big thank you to the Buhari government for actually helping, you know, the stranded Nigerians who are in Ukraine. Yeah, I want to say very big thanks to Geoffrey Onyema and his crew and what they actually did, because we are not actually there to say this is what happened. It's just based on what people tell us. And this is somebody who has a first-hand eyewitness account.
Right.
So I want to say a very, very big thank you to them.
Thank you.
For this big thing they actually did to Nigerians. Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. Ufoma is here. Let's speak with Ufoma very quickly. Ufoma, hi.
Hey, thank you, Sheriff Baba.
Good morning to you.
Please, I want to ask your guest, what is the situation right now in Ukraine? Because the Russia president, today is the deadline that they are going to bring down the Ukraine country. So I just want to ask, the situation in Ukraine right now, is it friendable than what you have been hearing before?
Is it better?
That's just my question.
Okay. Peter, to you, are you interested?
Yes, I mean, it's not better at all. I mean, if you go to a city like Mariupol, which is in the north, in the southwest of the country, you know, it's being completely obliterated at the moment. So the Russians are still carrying out this campaign. You know, there's still killings. I mean, just yesterday there was reports about a town where people were taking shelter in a high-rise building, and the Russians bombed that high-rise building, and 60 people are confirmed dead now. Today, the Russians are celebrating the end of the Second World War. So they've got their military tanks out. I've just got an alert on my phone now to say Vladimir Putin is about to address the Russians, because he wants to portray himself as a powerful leader. So the situation in Ukraine right now is as bad as it has ever been. I just want to go back to what one of your callers asked.
Right.
I think it was the first call. I think they were trying to ask about what African governments have said about the war in Ukraine. Now, a few weeks ago, there was a resolution in the UN to the United Nations to condemn the war in Ukraine.
Right.
Several countries like Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana, they supported that resolution. Some countries like Tanzania and South Africa abstained and refused to vote, while Eritrea voted completely against it. But the African Union has also condemned the fighting and says peace should be brought. President of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, has actually been nominated to try and mediate between both parties. But as you rightly mentioned, it's going to be very difficult for any one African country to say the war should stop, and then it stops. It's not going to happen.
Peter Okocha, senior broadcast journalist at the BBC, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, Sheriff, and have a nice day.
You too. Lagos, that's the first part of our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's quickly take a quick break. When we return, we'll have our second part of the conversation talking education. with our friends from the American consulate. Stay here with us on Nigeria Info 99.3.
Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio.